Bonjour.
Hello and welcome to this 50th edition of So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Yeah, that's really surprising. Félicitations.
Bon anniversaire.
Merci. And it's actually thanks to you, dear listener, that we already made 50 podcasts of So French. We're very happy about that. We hope we'll do 50 more at least. And that you keep listening to So French. My name is Stefan de Vries.
And my name is Sara Bertelsson.
And this week we talk again about strikes, about the bad approval ratings, and a trolling former president, all at once. It's almost 1 year to the day after the election of Emmanuel Macron, and how is he doing?
And an end to an era. You probably thought that this was done years ago, but it was actually only this week that the last French telegram was sent. Full stop.
And we also have a look at the Cannes Film Festival that's about to start next week.
So now, 1 month and 14 striking days later, the French railway company SNCF, keeping up with their protests against the planned reforms, the government's planned reforms of the state-owned company. It seems like, you know, they have fewer and fewer participants, but the interruptions are quite big.
Yeah, absolutely. The trains are running even on the days that there are strikes, but you know, maybe one in two trains are running. And because they strike every 2 days, even on the days that are supposed to work, the network is pretty disturbed because there are trains in places that they're not supposed to be. And of course, people are starting to get a bit annoyed by the ongoing strikes. They're losing their patience. And we also see that the people who participate in the strikes is going down. Although the controllers and the train drivers are respecting the strikes, so about 60% of them are still participating.
That's why the disruptions are so big, because of course that has a big impact. If you don't have any ticket controls or train drivers, of course there will be no trains leaving the stations. And I mean, if we look at the managers, for example, only 10% of the managers are striking, or even less. I think it's about 6%. It depends a little bit on the striking days, but very few. And this shows as well that there is some kind of split within the SNCF company, I would say, that, you know, it's not only the SNCF against the government and these planned reforms, but even within.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people who work at the SNCF, they know that they will have to change. And even within the SNCF, you already have other companies like Thalys, the trains to Brussels and Amsterdam, or the Eurostar to London. Those are also SNCF companies, but they already operate under the new regime. And there are rarely strikes at those companies, and they're doing pretty well. So I think within the SNCF, there are people that see the necessity of change, and so they simply don't participate. And also the number of people participating is going down since the first strike. Le Monde, the newspaper, had a very complicated calculation about the fact that it has not such a big impact.
No, because they've been trying to compare this movement to the big strike and social movements in 1990s. And this has been the whole thing with this protest. You know, we're going to show that this can be as powerful and as important as it was in the 1990s. But this Le Monde calculation that, you know, takes into consideration all different things, I'm not going to get into that. But they actually show that it's not quite as a big impact, and not that many strikers as it did have in the 1990s, the big protest then. Of course, the major protest movement the protest movement, the mother of them all, is of course the May 1968 protests here in Paris. And this, what's going on here in May, 50 years later, is nothing compared to that.
No, absolutely not. And if you go into the French newsstands, you see May 68 commemorial issues everywhere on the radio.
They can't get enough of this.
And it's already half a century ago.
I think it's enough. I mean, French people love these commemorations and the nostalgia and the idea of of revolutions, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's there are not only strikes at the SNCF, but also at other companies, but they are completely unrelated. And the unions think, well, you know, let's strike all together and protest and let's redo May 68. And every couple of years in spring, there are protests and strikes in France. And every time they say, okay, this is going to be a new May 68. But, you know, it never really happens. And as we've seen now with the weather is getting better. There are exams at universities. You know, reality takes over. And
it doesn't really seem to be a, we talked about this earlier, wish from all parties to unite these different combats to one. I mean, there are some unions that are very much pushing for that, but other unions are saying, you know, we're not interested in some kind of la convergence de lutte, as it's called.
The convergence of battles.
Exactly, a united battle. Some prefer to keep protesting on their own issues.
Yeah, for instance, that Air France KLM pilots are on strike. They are very powerful because, well, when there's no pilot, you can't fly. Not yet. And they have very high salaries, but they're also very powerful. And they're also very selfish. They basically fight for their own rights, for the pilots, and not for the other personnel on board. And they have nothing to do with the strikers on the railway.
The SNCF neither with the students, of course.
So yes, there are a lot of strikes this spring, but it's really not a new May 1968.
We're almost 1 year to the day since the election of Emmanuel Macron. We have been talking a lot about Emmanuel Macron on this podcast. He has been everywhere over this last year, an impressive amount of reforms. And, you know, a very high-speed reform program put in place. And now, 1 year after, of course, it's the time for some kind of look back and see how is he doing and how, I mean, what are the French thinking about him?
I think it's a little bit too early. You know, a year is not much, but the French think differently. 64% of the French are disappointed in their president. And of these 64%, 28% is very disappointed. So he has disappointed a lot of people.
It must be said that no one really knew what they could expect from him either. I mean, there were a lot of hope put in Emmanuel Macron. At the same time, it was very difficult to actually know what he was going to do, even though there was a program, of course, and it must be said, he has followed his program.
Absolutely.
But I mean, there were so many, you know, you had left-wing voters, right-wing voters, centrist voters, and this whole big mix of people, and maybe, you know, difficult to know what you're actually going to end up with at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, what's interesting is that people disapprove some of his politics, but not really, it's not very clear what they really want. Because let's give an example, as we just mentioned, that they approved the reform of the railways, 62%. But then the controversial asylum and immigration bill that was voted last week, that is disapproved by 52% of the people. So they sometimes they agree with him and sometimes they are against him. And the same goes for the fiscal policies. 69%, so over two-thirds, they disapprove the reforms in wealth tax, the cuts
in students. Quite a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot, yeah.
And it's been said that the fiscal policies has been quite right wing, you know. We've seen the wealth tax being cut, and as you said, the students' benefits and all of that. So I think many are considering that it's a very right wing program when it comes to the fiscal policies.
Yeah. So he made a campaign last year, Emmanuel Macron, that he was neither from the left nor from the right.
And it looks like he has sort of succeeded in that, because according to the numbers and, you know, this particular poll, 46% consider him neither left, right, or centrist. I don't know what he is in that case, but I mean, that's up to them to say. So, I mean, almost half of the voters. But then if you look, you know, those 35% do find him to the right after all, and only 4% would consider him to be to the left the political spectra.
Which is interesting because in the parliament, the Les Républiques, La République en Marche, they have members from the former Socialist Party as well, almost half, I think.
But I think if you look at what we were talking about, the reforms that have been pushed through so far, what has been getting a lot of attention in the media has, of course, been the fiscal reforms. Mm-hmm. Very much a right wing or very pro-business fiscal policy, and an asylum and immigration bill also got a lot of media attention, and maybe also we can talk about that in the labor reforms. Of course, these three issues all I would say going more in the right wing direction, mm-hmm. than in a left wing. So I would say for a general public to consider him to be left with those major topics on the agenda would be difficult.
Well, it's too early to judge after 1 year. The unemployment is not really moving, but there is some good news from Brussels.
Yeah, this week, actually, the European Commission announced that France will be considered out of the
bad guys.
No longer the bad guys, exactly. They have been, criticized by the European Union for over 10 years having had a budget deficit of more than 3%. And this is according to EU rules, not allowed. France not always following the rules and has had a big problem getting under that 3% bar. But now for the second year in a row, it looks like this is going to happen. And even though the European Commission thinks that that will be the case also for next year. So France now will have in 2017, the budget deficit was about 2.6% of the gross domestic product. This year, it's expected to land at about 2.3%. So good news for France. Good news for this was announced by Pierre Moscovici, who is then the European Commissioner for France, but he couldn't help himself when he was
Incredible.
Announcing these numbers to say that it was all a little bit thanks to him, actually, because as we know, he used to be a finance minister.
Yeah, in indeed. So always very modest to those French politicians. French.
But someone, I mean, good news for Pierre Moscovici and good news for Emmanuel Macron and for France, I think it would say, but someone is not that happy about all of this. Or maybe not thinking that he's getting enough credit for what's going on.
Exactly.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Now, former presidents are supposed to keep their distance and not comment on their successors, but François Hollande, he thinks differently. He really doesn't like to be in the shadow of his pupil, Emmanuel Macron, who basically backstabbed him, according to François Hollande. The one-term president, he can't stop trolling the current president. He published a book last month, the first part of his memoirs. And he has been on TV and on the radio ever since, actually. So he should be happy about the fact there's good economical news, but he doesn't really seem to be happy. So he has been in the media all the time, and these are a few of the things he has been saying lately about Emmanuel Macron.
Le président des riches, c'est ce qu'on entend beaucoup, c'est ce que vous pensez?
Non, c'était pas vrai. Il est le président des très riches. Vous avez ma réponse.
Vous auriez pu le battre, vous, à cette élection?
J'aurais pu, mais je ne l'ai pas voulu.
We could hear that François Hollande speaking to different journalists. And what he said there was, first of all, that Emmanuel Macron is not the president of the rich. He is the president of the very rich. This caused quite a lot of stir and a lot of funny comments on Twitter and social media, I must say. Secondly, he also said that Emmanuel Macron wasn't elected because of his transgression or anything, but because the left was split and the right in ruins.
And how, well, the left was split, left was in ruins as well. And who was responsible?
And then thirdly, what he also said is that he asked the question, would he have beaten Macron? And he said, I could have, but I didn't want to.
Always modest, this old president. François Hollande will be probably hearing more of him, because he certainly looks like he likes to be back again in the media. And the journalists as well, they love him because he is very outspoken. So that's François Hollande.
Now, speaking of Emmanuel Macron, once again, he's been touring the world.
Yeah, he's collecting air miles.
Absolutely. He was last week in the US, very closely followed trip to Washington. This week, he has been in Australia, also creating some headlines.
Yes, of course, everybody knows that Macron speaks English. And let's have a listen to what he said when he was in Australia.
But I wanted to thank you for your welcome. Thank you and your delicious wife for your warm welcome. It's the perfect organization of this trip. Thanks to you and Lucy. Thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister. Thank you very
well, much. Sarah.
Yummy.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, this created some people to laugh around the world. It actually, apparently, I didn't know this, that in French you can actually, or you could, but probably quite some time ago, say that someone is délicieux. And talk about not their physical appearances as a cake,
yeah.
But their personality is delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
But apparently, there's also something, a kind of expression that you would have used in maybe in the 1920s. So we're not sure what Emmanuel Macron was trying to say, but there's something saying that maybe delightful.
Yeah, I think delightful would be the word. But it shows that Macron, well, maybe he speaks English pretty well, but he lacks a little bit of vocabulary.
He wasn't badly taken by
no,
Turnbull,
of course not.
Though, as far as what I've
but
heard.
In French,
didn't create a diplomatic spat.
He probably translated it literally, and in French, this is what they call a faux ami, a false friend. And I don't know if Australia considers Macron as a false friend, but at least the Australian media, they had a real laugh about it. Now, from his trip to Australia, he took another plane and he went to New Caledonia, which is a French territory in the South Pacific, very far away, about, 20,000 kilometers from France, yeah, really on the other side of the world. And why did he go there?
Well, this is a territory that is getting ready to vote on its independence. This vote will take place in November. And Emmanuel Macron is there to sort of prepare for this vote. We'll see if New Caledonia will still be French next year.
Yeah, and it's an interesting area because it's not really part of France in the sense that it's a department. It has some kind of autonomy, and the independence, or at least the referendum, was promised 30 years ago after riots and fights between supporters of independence and those who wanted to remain French. At that time, I think it was Jacques Chirac, he promised a referendum in 30 years, which is now, at the end of this year. There's still tension between the parties, and so Macron is visiting this part of the world during this tension. He will also attend the ceremonies marking the 30th anniversary of the massacre in Uvea.
This is a very, very touchy story and sensible story, both for France, of course, but especially for the people of New Caledonia.
Yes, the Kanak separatists, the Kanak is the people, the original people of the island. They took French military police hostage on the island of Uvea, and two gendarmes were killed and also 19 hostage takers. So Macron is going to be there. There's also a film made, I think, by Mathieu Kassovitz about this period in history. Mathieu Kassovitz, the famous actor and director, and he defended the Kanak separatists, and that was really not very well received here in Paris. But it shows how sensible his trip is, Macron's trip is to
absolutely, and that he's making this trip exactly on the 30th anniversary of the hostage taking and this massacre is very symbolic. And it has been, there is a debate, and there are people who are opposed to Emmanuel Macron attending this ceremony of the 30th anniversary. There were 19 people who died or were killed in that assault. Apparently 17 of the families were for Emmanuel Macron to attend these ceremonies, but two families were still against his presence. But as we said, this is, of course, a very difficult story, and especially since no one has been convicted for this assault or for these killings because of kind of a reconciliation deal that was made After the events.
Yeah, and of course the importance of Nouvelle-Calédonie, it's very far away from Paris. It's only islands. There are about 250,000 people living, but it is very rich in nickel. So that's an important strategic asset. And then there's also the fact that because Nouméa is French, France has this huge maritime territory in that part of the world. So it has also a defense interest. So that's the reason
and
why.
That's why we heard Macron and Turnbull talk about when Macron was in Australia, the importance of, you know, keeping a military cooperation to push back the Chinese, or at least not letting China take more and more of that area.
Absolutely. And France is basically the only country that still has presence in all the continents, in South America, of course, in Africa, in the Pacific Ocean, and in Europe. So it's very strategic. So it's a touchy trip.
What's going to happen then if they vote for an independence?
Yeah, well, then they lose their presence in that part of the world. But I think there will be some deals, of course, on military basis. But it looks like the latest polls, it looks like the people who would like to stay part of France are slightly in the majority. But the referendum is only at the end of the year. So many things can change. And we'll probably talk about that again here in So French. Maybe we can do a special there, going there. It would be nice.
We'll in Nouméa. That sounds like a good capital. Idea.
Yeah.
So now it's that time of the year, the Cannes time of the year. Next week, it's the 71st Festival of Cannes that will kick off. This year, of course, in a very particular context, with everything that's happened in Hollywood after the Harvey Weinstein scandal, of course, having its implications as well on the European continent and in European cinema as well. We don't know to what extent quite yet, but we do know that this year has... well, that was announced quite some time ago already, a female head of the jury.
Yes, I think the organization of the festival realized that they couldn't.
it was too much of a risk to take a man, I guess.
Absolutely. And they made some mistakes in the past because the festival is really close with Woody Allen, for instance. Harvey Weinstein was, of course, also one of the heroes of the Cannes Film Festival because he Americanized the Cannes Film Festival and made it really into a global festival, for instance, with Pulp Fiction, won the Golden Palm. So he was very important to the Cannes Film Festival. And I think the organizers, the direction of the festival must be pretty embarrassed that they... you know, they were collaborating with Weinstein. But nevertheless, this year, the head of the jury is Cate Blanchett. She is, of course, a wonderful actress, but she's also very outspoken when it comes to women's rights issue. She's the 12th woman to head the Cannes Film Festival. Previous one was Sophia Loren. There was also Ingrid Bergman. Also recently, Isabelle Huppert, but only 12 women in 71 years. Very bad track record. And the very first one, she is interesting.
Yeah, it is. The first woman to head the jury was actually Olivia de Havilland. You might not know her name, but she played Melanie Wilkes in Gone with the Wind, the 1939 classic. She was the first woman in 1965 to head that jury. She's an exciting, I mean, interesting character.
Yeah, yeah.
101 years old.
Still alive.
Still alive, yeah. And still very vocal and, yeah, and you know, strong woman who has, you know, of course, been interviewed about her thoughts about what's going on in Hollywood with Harvey Weinstein and also, you know, with her own experience as a head of the Cannes jury. And, you know, she has been... what she said about the fact that it's only been 12 women so far, she said, I am more than surprised. But then she also said, I am dismayed about this. And so she's, you know, she's not very happy about how the women are being represented in Cannes.
And Olivia de Havilland is not only still alive, but she's also living in Paris.
Yes.
That's really nice. And she was a great actress in the 30s and 40s.
But to get back to the Cannes, there has been some kind of push for women directors and for women to be more better represented in this year's Cannes Film Festival. We're going to see where it will actually end up. But, you know, you have quite a lot of women directors.
Yes, and women directors are not doing very badly in France, if you compare to other European countries. Almost a quarter of the French movies are directed by women. And the UK and Spain, it's only 11%, and Italy 10%. So it's not the majority, 25%, still a long way to go. But nevertheless, over the last 5 years, there were 282 French movies with a female director. And that's almost half of all the European movies directed by women.
But it's still a long way because, I mean, if you look at the students that are educated from the cinema schools, that's 50-50.
Yeah.
So it's 50% women, 50% men. But then those who actually become directors of movies are still... So we wonder where do the women go? Also, one interesting thing, of course, when it comes to the cinema business is... It's all a question of money. It's not everything, of course, but a lot is a question of money. And a study that was made in 2017, I think, showed that women directors in France, we're talking now, were paid 42% less than their male colleagues. 42%. This is quite far from what is already outrageous 10% or we're talking about in other professions. And when it comes to the budget of the actual movies, women tend to have smaller budgets as well. The average for a male director is a 4.7 million euros budget. And for a female director, that budget is 3.5 million.
Yeah, that's a big difference. But I think the Me Too movement really, really changed something. And it's just the beginning of a real emancipation. But at least this year, Cate Blanchett is the president of the jury in Cannes, the film festival that starts next week. Now, if you want to contact us, you can send us an email on sofrench@sofrench.news. But until last week, you could have sent us a telegram. I didn't even know it was...
I would have appreciated it,
yeah,
I must
me
say.
Too. But no, none of you listeners ever send us a telegram. Very disappointing.
And now it's too late.
Too late. Yeah, what happened? I didn't even know they still existed, actually.
Neither did I, but we learned this week that the last French telegram was sent on the 30th of April, 2018, at the exact time of 23:59.
Wow. And it was funny because it was announced by a tweet of one of the union presidents. Now, telegrams, people were still using it. Actually, it was launched in 1879. So that's 100 and almost 130 years ago. Still being used by some people. You could order one on telegram.com.com. And how did it work?
Oh, yeah. You could either order that, and then you could call a number. And you called a person and you dictated your message. Of course, with the stop and what was the other code words
dash
you had to say?
Or dot, I don't know.
a number of these very particular code words.
Yeah.
And then the operator transferred it to the receiver by the phone. And then the next day, the post would deliver the actual letter. So not exactly the same way as we have learned through movies that the telegram system used to work in the earlier days. But what is kind of fascinating with this story, I must say, that we learned that in 2005, so that's, 15 years ago, 13 years ago, 900,000 telegrams were sent in France.
Incredible. In the time with email. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. But it's once again the end of an era. After 139 years, you are no longer able to send us a telegram. But you can send us an email. Please do.
Now that wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed this anniversary edition. Please follow us on Twitter. It's @SoFrenchNews. And if you have any questions or suggestions, send us an email on, as we said, SoFrench@SoFrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or in the TuneIn radio application. And please share this podcast with your friends. And if you like French music, check out our playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. Just search for So French Podcasts or click the link on our website.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French online and on air on World Radio Paris.
We hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening.
Au revoir.